But if that person who doesn't accept help really, really knew how much it helped the other person to help them, that would move them. That would melt any heart, I think.
And that,
wow, you really helped me by letting me do this for you. You don't know how much you're actually helping me.
Welcome to Elements of Styles, the business podcast that trades in scarce thinking for community, conversation, and ideas in abundance. Each week, I, Mark Styles, sit with professionals and entrepreneurs, both local and global, and learn how they each add value to their communities, their partners, and their teams. Please enjoy.
Hey, folks, welcome back to Elements of Styles. Today, I'm super grateful to have an individual, an altruistic individual, who's leading the charge in a really cool charitable endeavor that we're going to talk a lot about. It's part of our Charity 365 initiatives. And she's also been a teacher. So you'll hear that in her storytelling. She's a cancer survivor. So you're going to know her purpose. She's running Learn, Live, Love. And they're hosting a fundraiser at Stellwagen in Marshfield, Massachusetts, South Shore, Boston, on June 9th of this coming summer, 2024. June 9th, 2024, at Stellwagen, a wonderful event for Learn, Live, Love. Please meet Pam All. Welcome to
the show. Mark.
Pam, how are you?
I'm doing fine. I still can't believe I'm doing this. This is my first podcast. I say it like there's going to be multiple more, like all of a sudden there'll be a whirlwind of podcasts, but this, I've never done anything like this before.
Why wouldn't there be a whole bunch more?
I don't know.
The beginning of something special right here.
Yeah, gee whiz. I'm just really grateful for your time. And, you have an amazing team of people at Styles Law and Secure a Title. I'm so grateful to all of them. My partners and I are really grateful. We had such a nice kind of roundtable meeting that was spearheaded by Rebecca Lewis at your firm. And they're great people. You know, sometimes you just walk into a room, or at least if you're me, you walk into a room and my daughter would say, Mom, you got to read the room and you can get a vibe. You can get an energy. And a lot of times if people are interested in Learn, Live, Love, you know, they'll say, well, will you come talk to us about it a little bit? Will you come tell us about the organization? Or we've heard about it. Will, you know, we have questions. Will you do a presentation, a meet and greet? And oh, sure, I'll do that. Sure. And you go into the room and it kind of feels very, I don't know, like kind of a corporate business cold feel, like, or like I'm doing a PowerPoint presentation for the principal, you know, like one of those lesson plan things where you got to put together the lesson plan and they come in and they observe you. And there's lots of encouragement, but there's also an unspoken critique. So you walk in, you go, When I walked in and met your people, I was like, I kind of felt like I was walking into like one of my friends' houses or something. Yeah. Sit down, have a cup of coffee. There's some cookies. Let's talk. And it was such a good vibe. And then to have this opportunity, you reach out and you say, I want to do a podcast. Do you want to talk about Learn, Live, Love? And I'm like, I don't know. How much time do you have? Because I talk a lot.
Well, let's go. First of all, what is it and what inspired you to get it going?
Learn, Live, Love, cancer outreach organization. I'm one of the co-founders. I work closely with a dear friend of mine, Rosie Lawnborg. Her husband, Jim, and a friend of ours also, Amy Ferry. Back in 2005, we were all kind of living our situate lives and, you know, working our jobs and doing our stuff. And we would all volunteer a lot over at St. Mary the Nativity in Situate. And we met through, like, I was volunteering out doing CCD and stuff. And when I had a surprise cancer diagnosis. And it was in, I think it was like late April. Yeah, late April, early May. It's funny. People will say like, I don't remember much about the rest of it, but I know the day and time I was diagnosed where I was, and I'm like, yeah, I don't. I do remember my surgery date though, but that's another thing. Anyhow, Rosie was one of the women in town that coordinated this amazing outreach of just daily help. I had two small kids at the time. I mean, I still have two kids, but they're just not small anymore. They're very large. No, they're, yeah, I think Grace is in her, Grace is, yeah, they're both pushing 30s in their early 30s. But anyway, it was tough because it was spring. It was going into summertime when I was doing radiation treatment. And one day I came home and in my mailbox was a lovely note from Rosie and a full-blown schedule of like, so these are people who would love to make meals for you. This is someone who wants to take your kids to the beach. These are the pool party invitations for your children. This is the driving schedule. We're going to, you know, these people would love to be driving you back and forth to radiation treatments. And, you know, it would be helpful if you put a cooler on your porch so that people could like drop off the meals. Nobody wants to bother you. And I was just like, what is going on? Like this help was like descending like a whirlwind from the sky. And I was, I really and truly, I was overwhelmed.
Yeah.
And part of me struggled with that because like, I'm the volunteer in town. I'm the one helping other people or doing stuff for other people. And here's, which is why I love Rosie, because she's of that same mindset. I think some people maybe are they, is it possible to be genetically predisposed to be like a helper?
Like I think so.
Run in to help. You think so?
I think so. And I think it's also an addicting feeling, right? When you start to get that helper's high, we've talked about that helper's high, right? And it becomes this desire, this need. But what I'm hearing you say, which is so interesting, and I've heard so many people say this in the past is, you know, I want to help. I don't like asking for help. I certainly don't want to be a burden.
Right. Mark, there's a reason they say better to give than receive. You know why?
It feels way better.
Nobody really wants to be on the receiving end, you know?
Yeah, but you know what? Hey, riddle me this.
Weird.
Riddle me this for a second. And we've gotten to talk at length. And folks, you can tell we've gone pretty deep in some of our conversations. However, you don't want to ask for help. I don't want to ask for help, right? I love helping. I love the feeling of helping. What if we were to reframe it and say, we want to share that feeling of helping, right? We want to spread that love around that, you know, this is what it feels like. This is how to live because it feels so good. You're, it's almost like a selfish feeling. Like I want to help. Yet that balance of, but I don't want to be helped. What if we were to reframe it and say, I want to share this with people. So I'm actually going to ask them for help. So, because I know they want to, and I know they're going to feel good about it. Right. Yeah. So that now, because sometimes we need help, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes. Let's talk about that.
And there's the feeling that comes with needing help in a culture that, I mean, define it in any, I don't know, subgenre you want, like whether it's harder for women to ask for help because just by the very nature of our being, you know, we bring life into the world. It's like we do this by ourselves. I got to help. We're the mothers, we're the aunts, the nieces, the grandmothers, we're the women who, you know,
get it done.
Back in the day, they tend the home. They manage the foundation so that everything can grow out of the foundation. And so it's like, whether it's home or family life or children or, you know, relationships and everything, it's like, we're the caregivers. And I say that like with all due respect and humility for what men do in our culture too, because there are plenty of men that are caregivers, that are helpers, that are builders, that are, you know, I wouldn't be where I am today if it wasn't for my mom and my dad, who, you know, actually today, I mentioned it briefly, but I know I'm going to go there. Because if you're going to jump in the pool, you might as well jump in the deep end, right? Just jump in.
Exactly.
Today, March 19th, is a feast day of St. Joseph. And my parents brought me home from Catholic Charities on this day. So I was the recipient of an amazing gift of help, when you think about it, just through no like fault or doing of my own, it being adopted. Like, these two people wanted to help, and they did. They gave me and continue to give me. I was just on the phone with them this morning. They both called me to say, well, we're calling you on your special day. And I was like, oh my God, it is. It's my special. Oh my God, it is. But and here I am running around preparing for a Zoom call that I'm really uncomfortable about doing because I talk too much and I think I'm going to, oh my God, mama. And I like stopped and I like cried for a second. I'm like, yeah, this is what it's all about. It's about the love. It's about the giving and about the saying, thank you so much, you guys, for just living your dreams so that I could live mine.
Wow.
And that's kind of where learn, live, love comes in. It's like, we're always learning these new things about, the ways that we can live our lives to bring us to the highest, purest form of love experience, and love not being googly, like when I was a teacher and I'd say, now look, we're going to talk about like love today. And it's Valentine's Day or it's something, love. And they'd be like, ooh, googly, I love this. And I'd be like, no. First of all, that's not love. That's infatuation. I taught English, so there's all kinds of words. And a crush. And it's this love. What is love? Let's look at what love is. Love is patient. Love is kind. Love is slow to anger. Love isn't boastful. Love isn't. Matter of fact, just so that not the gospel according to Pam, but let's look in the Bible. Let's see what Jesus says, because I taught in a Catholic school. That's worth going there too. But it's like when we look at the highest potential for love in our lives. It's all about giving and receiving individually, collectively. Like when we live that dream of experiencing just love and peace and connectedness, that's where it's at. It's like we need to have that balance of giving and receiving. I didn't know that. And I thought I knew a lot.
So you didn't know that up until the time that you received that letter?
No, because I had just turned 40 when I had my diagnosis.
Yeah.
And my big thing was, oh my God, I am a bona fide grown-up. My mother would say, you're a grown-ass woman now. Like 40, like I'm like, okay. And what have I done with my life? Okay, I've had kids. I have a nice house. And my husband, I love him so much. And I felt like my life was over. I was literally calling people on the phone, some trusted friends. I'm like, all right, when you turn 40, did you like hit a wall? Like, what do? And some people talk about hitting that wall when they turn 30 and they're like, oh, I'm 30. I'm older. I turned 30. And I was like, yeah, I'm really just still 22 in my head. So now that I'm 59, I've really just now reached 30. So no, but it was a kind of an emotional thing for me. And what brought me kind of back to a reality was this unbelievably surprising cancer diagnosis. I'm like, what? I have cancer. What are you talking about?
So how did that come about?
40. I'm only 40. Because actually, when I turned 40, my doctor said, well, you're 40 now. So you need to go get, have you had a mammogram before? Have you had this test and this test? It's like, yeah, actually I did. I've had a mammogram for when I was younger, because being adopted, no medical history. I was, if there was a lump or a bump, I was always at the doctor.
Yeah.
We didn't ever know what it was. And so she says, well, you're 40. You got to get a mammogram just for safety's sake. And I said, excellent. No, because you know what? I'm fine. I don't smoke. I really don't even take a drink. And I just like, no, I don't. I think I'm fine. I mean, I've had one before. I knew what it involved. It's a very unpleasant test at times. And I'm like, they're just not going to do that. And she goes, look, please, one of my friends. And she told me the story of her friend. So through story,
yeah,
I was moved. And I'm like, all right, I'll go get one. And I did. And it was like, I got home from the test have to, of course, stop in a TJ Maxx because everybody says you're supposed to do something fun when you're doing something. Have something fun at the end of the rainbow, so it makes you do what you have to do. So I was like, okay, got home from TJ Maxx. And the phone was ringing, and I hurry and pick up the phone. It says, Mrs. Saul, could you come back? We have a Dana-Farber doctor that's here with us today. Like, they do rounds or whatever, the coverage for this. I was back at InMed in Norwell back at the time. And I was like, well, what do you mean? She goes, well, there's some microcalcifications, clusters of them. And I'm like, yeah, what is that? I don't know what that means. I don't even drink milk, you know? And she says, they usually indicate cancer. And the way these are clustered, we don't like the look of them. And, you know, we would like for you to meet with this doctor and she can talk about how you might want to proceed. And I just was like blown away. I'm in my kitchen. It's like 4 p.m. My husband walks in from work and he's looking at me and I'm like, he's like, what's the matter? What's going on? And I'm like, Chucky, they actually just told me on the phone that I have cancer. And can we actually get the kids in the car? We need to go back up to Noel because there's a Dana-Farber doctor she's a breast cancer specialist. They want me to talk to her right now. Like, it was like, hurry up and don't think, just get in the car and go up. And it was that fast.
Wow.
But boy, all of a sudden, 40 felt like not old at all.
What do you mean by that?
It felt too young to die.
Right.
I'll just say that. It's like I was going to try to say it in a nice way, but it's like, you know what? It felt too young to die because it's kind of like for when I became pregnant with my first child. You know, you walk around, you don't see anybody pregnant. All of a sudden you become pregnant. Now you see pregnant women everywhere.
Yes.
Or, you know, you have a broken leg. Or all of a sudden you see broken leg people everywhere, you know, or this was like, I had cancer all of a sudden. I'm like reading the paper every night and I'm like, oh my God, she's 50 years old. She's dead. She had cancer. Oh my God. That one's full. She's dead. Oh my God. Oh my God. And it was like, I was seeing women my age in the Irish sports page. And I'm like, if I struggle with this disease for 10 years, I'll only be 50 and I'll be gone. And so it was a reality check that was unexpected. And am I in a rabbit hole? I feel like.
No, this is beautiful, actually. So at that point, you know, faith kicks in. At that point, there's a level of anxiety, I would imagine, that kicks in. Like, what's next? How did those folks know to schedule around you like that? Like, how did that happen?
I'm going to say, I don't know. That's a really good question.
So how does it happen?
Because
now?
It's not like I went and told everybody.
Right.
You know, although I know I told Rosie, because it's like you have to have one or two really good women. Rosie was close to me over in the CCD office and I would just, I know I'd let them know. Our friend Amy, her husband Paul was very ill at the time with cancer. And I'm just like, you know what, you guys, I got this diagnosis and I don't really know how that morphed. I'm going to just say Rosie did her magic and actually connected with another of my daughter's girlfriend's moms. I know that sounds like weird, but her name's Wendy Addison. And I always liked Wendy because our kids would play together, but we didn't know each other very well. We lived in different neighborhoods. Wendy was like Rosie's co-pilot on the mission to help Pam. And Wendy and I are still friends to this day, and we're just dear friends. So it opened up a friendship that I didn't even know I would miss or love. I'm going to have to ask Rosie that question. Rosie, how did all that come about? Because I'll tell you, Mark, it was like a wad of paper. It looked like wrapped up like a diploma. I unfolded it. I was like, what in God's name is this? And my first feeling was not one of gratitude. It was, I know, I just looked at you, look at me like, how could you not be grateful? I was like, are you kidding me? I can do this my own self.
Yeah. That's
the thing right there.
That's it. And
don't tell me, oh my God, wait, they think I can't do this. I can do this. Like, I will rise to any challenge. Like, it's like you're 6 years old and you're like, hey, you're not the boss of me. I can do this myself. There was a current of that in me.
Of course.
And because I am pretty self-sufficient, my husband and I do a lot ourselves. Like, we like to do stuff ourselves, you know?
So was there a sense of surrendering?
There was a sense of like, I don't want to do this. I can drive myself. I'm not sick enough. I don't deserve this.
Yeah.
Like, this is somebody else who could really use this help, and it's not me.
Yeah.
And one of my other friends, this woman, Kathy Hoffman, I'm giving her a shout out too. She was on the phone and she goes, Hey lady, I'm going to be driving you to radiation tomorrow. And I just loved her. We had the friendship where we could just like say anything to each other. And I'm like, guess what? I'm taking my own self. I love you, Cap. I can drive myself. Like, I'll probably go to TJ Maxx after. Shout out to TJ Maxx too, when I really actually like Marshalls. But she's like, hey, let me just, I'm just going to say this about that. I'm coming to pick you up. And just so you know, it's not because like you really need me to drive you. It's because I want to spend time with you in the car and maybe like buy you a latte. And this is like what the people are doing. Like, they just want to share some time. And could you say yes to a free cup of coffee? And I was like, oh my God, I am so ungrateful. I can't believe I was like, oh. And so I let
them,
people drive me.
And they want to help. They do.
And you think that would have been enough of a wake up call. But I was like, you know, I came home one day and there was a giant red body pillow on my back deck. And I'm like, all right, this is going to be really helpful, because I had to have a little bit of surgery, had a lumpectomy, they have these tests. And I'm like, yeah, it was nice to, but I'm like, all right, people probably think that I'm in really bad shape. I was blessed with early detection. I was blessed. I dodged a flaming bullet. Oh my God. And I didn't want people overdoing their help for me, thinking that I was dying, and then I would be disappointing them by not being as sick as I know. That's where that brain goes. So I'm just, this is me being honest.
I've had one coffee to
get the real me. But
it's so interesting.
It needs to be said. It needs to be said out loud.
Because you're not alone.
Talking about that. Yeah, I'm not alone on that. And now that I'm pushing 60, I'm going to be speaking my personal truth in the most loving Christian way. I felt like I needed to be chemoed and everything and surgeried and weak and bordering death to deserve all this help that I was getting. And I'm not the only one who feels that way. I actually had Father Manning was the priest over at St. Mary's at the time. And I love Monsignor McNamara. He just, oh God. I thought I would never really take to a priest or a homilist the way I did Father Brian, but boy, the way I did with Monsignor, but Father Brian was amazing. And I had him over, he came over to visit because I wasn't doing the CCD anymore and I wasn't doing this, that, and the other thing. I had done home ministry for a while and he sat at my granite counter and he's like, so how are you, Pam? And over the cheese and crackers and, you know, I'm like, you know, Father, I'm actually doing like really good, I think. But I got to tell you, this is like really hard. And he goes, it is. You know, anyone dealing with the diagnosis, he was just such a wonderful, oh my God, kind of like a Woody Allen personality. But he was like, you know, you're going to get through this. And I go, oh no, I mean like, look at all this. Look at this beautiful meal that just came. Like, I don't even know if we can eat all that. And there's the red body pillow over there. Like, Father, people want to drive me every day. It's like, this is like ridiculous. And he just looked at me and he goes, you know, I'm just going to say this. What I believe is you need a lesson in humility.
Interesting.
And I go, oh, excuse me, what? Like, are you serious? I am like the most humble person I know. Like, I'm the one that helps everybody. He goes, Pam. And he was so calm and so kind. Like, it really, he was like, it's like he saw I really think it was the Holy Spirit. He saw right through and saw whatever, this thing in me that needed, that I needed to know. He's like, you need to allow other people the dignity of helping you, because you run around town. You help everybody. You're doing all these things. And he did. He listened. And I'm like, wow. I'd done like the Chernobyl Children Project. If there was something going on, I was involved with it somehow, helping people. But when he said that to me, I was like, I could say I was shocked, but I think it was even beyond that. It was like, what do you mean?
Isn't that interesting?
I needed to allow other people the dignity of helping me out. And let me tell you something. That is still stuck in me, because then I wanted to cry like, oh my God. It's not that I was ungrateful. I was so grateful, but I the things I was saying no to, I think maybe it was ego driven. It's a part of an ego that says, don't help me. I can do it myself. I don't need your help.
I help people. I don't need help.
Yeah. And I'm like, whoa. Yeah. And I never saw it to that, in that light, in that soft, gentle light of like what love is. Love is allowing people in and just saying, thank you so much for thinking of me, you know? But I was so guilt-ridden about feeling unworthy of the gift of their time, the gift of, meals and gifts and jewelry that I knew was costing people money or taking them out of their way. I think too much, obviously, but I still do that, but hopefully in a better way. I needed a better way to channel that. And when Father Brian said that to me, I mean, I have definitely shared that with other people who let me in close enough that I will say, hey, look, do you want to know? There are plenty of people who need help and who live lives on the edge. But to be able to have others, to gift them with that feeling of simple human dignity, like, thank you for seeing me in my need and for helping me.
Thank you for seeing me.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, how important is that? Thank you for seeing me.
Yeah. Seeing me,
So how much of that happens at Learn, Live, Love when the people are like overwhelmed that, it's like we need to kind of coach this person through this piece of it? Because
it's happened. I think it happens probably. I mean, I can only speak for myself, but well, maybe like Rosie too, that when it's someone who's really struggling, it's kind of a personal conversation.
Yeah.
That just evolves, or that just, you kind of recognize that moment. Like Rosie works in pediatric palliative care. So she's really, not that she's good at having those conversations, but she's good at having those conversations.
Yeah.
And, we're very like-minded in our deep faith and stuff. And she's, I know she's had those conversations, like, let us help you. And people say, no, but here, I'll make a donation. It's like, no, just let us help. Let us pay forward the love. And of course, back in 2005, our conversations were, very, very not at this level. We're pushing 20 years as a 100% volunteer operation of basically 3 to 5 women, that we have one gala every year to raise money. And then we have other people, we encourage other people to raise money on our behalf, because we all have jobs and lives, and there's grandkids and family members and aging parents and all kinds of stuff goes on. But we have this money in an account that we then pay out. We have one budget, and.
In, out.
In and out. And that's it. Yeah, exactly. And I did patient requests for many, many years. And now that I'm at a different phase in my life, Jim, he's in charge of patient requests now. And Rosie and I do more, and Amy and our other two partners that have come on the team, Kara Williams and Julie Nicolo, both beautiful women in Scituate. They've been joined our team to help us raise money and just generate awareness so that we can take patient requests. Right now, we do patient requests mostly from social workers and doctors and physicians. Back in the day, it was strictly word of mouth.
Yeah.
You know, it was like so-and-so has cancer, and all we needed was a doctor's letter and proof that you're a cancer patient. If you're a woman and you're a cancer patient, we'll help you. That's it. We don't need you to be below the poverty level, or we don't need you to be, you know, on your last leg. It's like, we will just provide you whatever it is that's going to make your heart and mind rest so that your body can heal and absorb whatever it is it needs to absorb, whether it's treatment or whatever it is, so that you can maintain the sanctity of your ordinary life and just live. It's so simple. I remember, like, when we were trying to start Learn, Live, Love, I had finished radiation treatment. It was like the end of August or September or something. And Rosie had taken me to one of my last radiation treatments. And we were just enjoying a big venti latte. I was like extra caramel swirl, whipped cream. I'm doing it up because it just was like loving spending my time with her. And we get there and there's a waiting area and all kinds of like cookies and snacks and anything you like, literature and everything you could ever want to have creature comforts in a waiting room for the cancer patients and the people who were taking them. And Rosie and I walked in and it was time for me to go into the inner sanctum. And I said, I'll be right back. But we were watching this woman, this lovely Irish woman, and I don't know her name. I don't know who she is or where she was from, but she had like four little kids in tow. And anyone who knows radiation treatment knows that it's a daily gig around the same time every day. And she's got her four kids, and you can tell they've been there before with her because they know exactly where the Oreos are at 10 a.m. in the morning, and they know it's with where the good juice boxes are, the flavor they like in the back of the fridge. It was like they were adorable. And there was like toddlers to maybe a, I don't know, 7 or 8 year old. And we were just like, wow, the nurses, the secretaries knew them. They were the most adorable children ever. And they were so well behaved. And we were just like, and we didn't say anything. Rosie and I didn't say anything to each other. And I'm like, okay, I go in and I'm going to get my treatment. And we're in this waiting room and this woman, and I kind of get a glimpse of her chest area because of the way the Johnny fell. And I, her burns were so bad, Mark. And I had heard about radiation burns. I just wasn't having any. I was using this goat milk formula. Maybe my skin was just, I don't know, but I wasn't having the bad radiation burns. This woman looked like someone took a flamethrower to her.
Wow.
And she's got the four kids and she's so cheerful and she's, and I'm just like, shit. It was. So now I get my treatment and then I leave and we're walking out the door and she's leaving at the same time and she's hollering to the kids and I don't really recall their name, but I'll never forget. She's like, now, come on now. Seamus, Colleen, we've got to get Michael to his swimming lessons. Come on now. Never mind. No, you've had enough Oreos. We're going. Come on. Come along now. And they did. They exited the thing. Rosie and I was silent in the car.
Like she was going to the dentist.
And I'm like, and I know Rosie loves kids too. And I go, Rosie, you saw that lady? And she goes, Ham, oh my God. And I'm like, no shit, Rose, where's her help? Like, I can't even drink this latte. I'm not even like, what? Oh my God. We were like, maybe going to go to lunch or go do something. It's like, I don't want to go to lunch. I don't want to go. I'm like, where's her help? I'm going to go home and there's going to be something in the cooler for us for dinner tonight. this. My kids are at so-and-so's pool party today, and I think they're going to, you know, great five stars or whatever the place is, the park tomorrow, Canopy Lake. It's like, where's her? She's going to swimming lessons right now, Rosie. I'm exhausted. And she's going to swimming lessons. Like, where's her help? And Rosie's like, I know. Like, what do you even do? What can we do? And I'm like, I know. And then Rose is like, I have an idea. What if we, what if we just get people together? What if we see, let's see if Father Brian will let us use like the brand new parish center, which was, it's gorgeous. And I'm like, yeah, Rosie, we could do that. And we could like get everybody and put all resources in one place. And maybe we could somehow like do something for survivors. And we literally, like on the Southeast Expressway, Learn, Live, Love was born.
I love
the
it.
The concept of a healing mass. Everybody exits. We go over. We bring in like different organizations and people who support patients and everything, you know, breast cancer, everything. We artists and people who celebrate their survivorship. And we planned a big, it was like a mini convention.
Cool.
And we held it that October. And that during that convention day, it was huge. The place was, we had Look Good, Feel Better there. We used all the classrooms as like breakout meeting places for different organizations so that you could visit like the main hall with music, entertainment, artwork, and support materials and free resources. And then you could visit the different classrooms for different things that, you know, you maybe needed help with or were interested in, like how to wear a wig or buy a wig or how do you do this medicine or just, it was awesome. It was awesome. And people were giving us money. People like, I want to make a, how do you guys are great. Like, you know, I just want to give you this check for $100. You'll know what to do with it. And we were like, what do you mean? Like, where, you know, what do you? So Amy was there and Amy was like, I have an idea. Like, well, what if we were a nonprofit?
Yeah.
Because Amy's the business manager over at St. Mary's. And so she was like, we could do this. We could do this.
Yeah.
People need help, we can just pay a bill for them or something or buy them some gas cards or food. And I was like, we were like, that's a great idea. And
what a great idea.
Yeah. And so it was like this idea that just took flight.
And now we're 20 years into it.
Yeah.
Helping many, many women.
Exactly. We get grant monies. We have some very generous annual donors. We have, we still keep it just 100% volunteer. Like we don't take stipends or honorariums or any kind of, we literally receive requests. And the criteria is if you're a woman and you're a cancer patient, we will help you. We will help you.
That's so inspiring, all of it. How does someone who wants to get involved get involved? What would obviously go to Stellwagen June 9th, 2024 in the afternoon and meet all of these amazing angels?
Yeah, that's going to be an amazing event. This is going to be our first event of anything of that kind.
Cool.
It's going to closely resemble our very first Learn, Live, Love event. It's like going to be this multi-dimensional groovy event at Stellwagen with like, I think we get to have like a special seltzer or a lager. Are they going to design something for us? Your team is garnering amazing like live and silent auction stuff. There's going to be live music and bands and games. And I'm like, it actually sounds like the very first of it. Just occurring to me now.
There you go. That's what it is 20 years later.
Holy crow.
That's what you're doing.
2000.
I love it.
2023, almost 20 years.
So
don't hold me on the math because
Who can go? Who ought to go?
Anybody and everybody.
Yeah.
Your Bridget and Megan tell me that it's going to be a very family friendly event.
Great.
Which I love that because guess what? Whether it's mom that has the cancer or dad that has a kid, it's the whole family is in it.
Yes.
It's, you know, everybody should be coming together to find support and celebration and hope and just love. Because in sharing the stories, that to me is the best, most healing part, is that people share their stories. And it could be just the tiniest detail of a story that has the hugest impact on a person that makes them feel like, oh my God, Philip, I am so not crazy. I'm not alone. I'm not ungrateful. I'm just, whoa, yes, I remember feeling like that. Or I remember thinking that, or that happened to me too. And it's empowering.
And that's,
and I don't know how or why. I mean, I'm not a psychiatrist and a, you know, nor do I play one on TV, but it's what I do know is that through the sharing of our stories, there's a lot of healing that goes on. There's a validation. So what better place to find connection and validation and celebration and a feeling of being seen and heard? Actually, not even a feeling. It's just of being seen and heard. Then an event like Secure Title is going to be doing with Stellwagen for Learn, Live, Love. Like, we are so bloody grateful. I can't even tell you. Like, this is blowing my mind.
Well, it's going to be amazing.
Think about it.
It's going to be amazing. So, folks, if you're listening to this, circle it in your calendar. I mean, this is how you gain awareness, right? Learn, Live, Love. You want to find out more about it. Come on down. Been to Stellwagen. Never been to Stellwagen. Like live music, like the people, like the energy that you're hearing. The people that you know will be there, go and check it out. Take that first step, right? Like you all did.
Yep.
When we sat together, you took that first step and said, maybe we can do this. And 20 years later.
You know what? If you can't do it for yourself, do it for someone else. Because that's, I don't know, I guess I can relate to that. It's like,
yeah,
I might not want to do something for myself to help myself, but it's like, I will definitely step out there for someone else.
Yeah.
And then in the process, you know, it's actually, it is helping all of us. Like, we pay it forward, Mark. Our organization has grown, not in size, but I will say in scope. Mm-hmm. There is another requirement that you need to be a resident of Massachusetts. So it's not just like the social, like we will help you. If you are a woman cancer patient and you live in Massachusetts, that's, you qualify.
That's awesome.
So when I tell you we've helped, since 2005, we've helped women from Chicopee down to Chatham. I'm not just being alliterative and cute. I mean it. Like there's women out in Chicopee whose families have been helped. Mm-hmm. You know, the oil trucks go out there. We paid real estate taxes. Down to, I don't even know what else there was a woman down the Cape years ago. We repaired a well, like her well was broken and she was in the middle of treatment and post-surgery and she was bringing her water in.
Oh boy.
Like from like the pump out there or something. And we were just like, what is going on? And we had collaborated with friends of Mel at that time. Pauline Allegheri, a dear friend, she's a warrior. She's an amazing woman. Friends of Mel is no longer operative, but we collaborated with them and a major donor who wishes to remain anonymous. And we literally, they rebuilt her well so that she could have running water in her home and she wouldn't have to. I'm like, how do you not have that anyway? But guess what? When you're sick, and you're in treatment and you're trying to get the meds and you're trying to just heal and stay warm. And it's just like, I don't know why people don't ask for help. Some people do, but mostly it's the best friend that says, hey, look, my friend is really like, I get it that they don't want help, but they need help. So what can I do?
And that's courageous in and of itself, because that friend might be like, why did you tell? I don't need help. What is the, let me ask you this before we move on, is how important is it to have support versus doing it yourself?
Okay, so here's why I'm not going to answer that.
Okay.
Because woe betide to me if I define importance somebody else other than myself.
What have you seen? Sharing of experiences, people who have accepted that help versus those, well, you might not have seen those that haven't, right?
Oh, Mark, I've seen a lot.
Yeah.
So
is there an intrinsic value, a healing component to accepting that support?
Oh my God, yes.
Okay.
Even for like the most hardened of us, which apparently I was pretty hardened.
Yeah.
And I think of myself as a soft, spontaneous person who is loving and happy and blah, blah. And it was like, I was having a big, big problem with the chocolate chip cookies arriving at the door. I can bake my own cookies. And it's like, not because I didn't want the help. It's because what that help represented to me in my little brain, in my ego brain. Because I say the word ego and it's like, oh, it just seems like I align it with like words like conceited and stuff. And it's harsh. Mm-hmm. But it's really about like just that our inner selves, our true inner selves. And it's like, guess what? I felt it made me feel inadequate in ways. It made me feel vulnerable in ways that I wasn't comfortable feeling, that I didn't want to feel like I needed that help. Like there was, so I think other people, maybe that's a human thing. And it's not just a Pam thing. It's, you know, like other people who don't want help, maybe they just really don't want it. And we need to respect.
Yeah.
Like you have to respect what's going to bring someone peace of mind and heart and what's going to really throw them for a loop.
Right.
Yeah. But if that person who doesn't accept help really, really knew how much it helped the other person to help them, that would move them. That would melt any heart, I think.
And that,
wow, you really helped me by letting me do this for you. You don't know how much you're actually helping me. And I remember saying at, don't I sound educated? I remember, I feel like I should be talking more appropriately. Like I'm on a podcast. Shouldn't I sound smart? But yeah, we were at an event and we all do our little, you know, speeches at an event. And I'm like, you know, we talk about what it means to accept help and whatnot. And I'm like, if I'm trying to help someone because of like somebody that I lost or someone I know that is suffering and, you know, I want to do something in memory of someone, the person who's receiving that doesn't always know the story behind the giving. Does this make sense at all?
Yeah.
In other words, like, so Mark, you know, you don't want help. Okay. Just pretend you're you and you don't want help. And you're like, no. And I'm like, but you know, you need it. Your best friend is like, he's messed up, man. He needs help. He's just the walls are falling down. The bills are piling up. Mm-hmm. They're threatening to shut off his phone, his gas, everything. And Learn, Live, Love can help you. The people that are donating to Learn, Live, Love, they're putting love and memories of their loved ones and people they've shared laughter and dreams with and children they've held and cherished. And they're putting that in our little red wagon. And we want to bring this little red wagon to your house and give you something out of it so that your journey can be a little bit easier so that you don't have to walk, so that you can have flip-flops while you're walking on broken glass. Does that make sense?
Yes.
That's what Learn, Live, Love does. You know, that's it, pure and simple. We just pay forward the love. And yeah, it's love in the form of money, but people say, yeah, just you're throwing money at a problem. And it's like, well, good. You know what? Good. Because sometimes money will make that problem go away.
Yeah.
Money will fill your oil tank so that you don't have to just rely on your electric blanket while you try to negotiate with the oil company to please just top off a little bit to get me through February. I mean, really? Really? Like, yeah, there's way, the obstacle is the way. Someone wicked smart told me that one.
Oh, that's That's funny. And that it's so, so very true. And people can participate in how they can, right? So a lot of people are like, well, I don't have a lot of discretionary income. We've got like a recession coming and,
yeah,
you know, I want to give, I can't really give. And, but.
So then you know what you can do?
What?
Just like, I don't know, follow our little Facebook page and hit share or just tell somebody, or do you know somebody who can use our help?
Yes.
It's, you can be a prayer warrior. Send us good vibes.
Yes.
You know, it's not all in the form of money. Like, yeah, we'll pay forward the money, but there's something to be said for positive energy. You know, there are a lot of like yoga groups out there and they do like focused yoga. I don't know a lot about it, but I know like they will send out energy. And I'm like, well, good. Then send it out on behalf of everyone who's suffering, because that works too. Or I don't know, you know, maybe people don't have discretionary income, but maybe they have in-kind donations, I will say.
Or the ability to help be that delivery, right?
Exactly.
Or help with a fundraising event, right? So June 9th, exactly. Right? How can I help? I mean, that's the greatest question in the world, I think, is how can I help?
How can I help? Yeah.
Yeah, folks, go down, come see Pam, come see the team. And June 9th, or go onto the website, learnlivelove.org. Now, I can't let you go right away because of all the episodes I've ever asked, I ask the same question. So our listener is definitely hanging on to hear what your answer is going to be.
And
you definitely broke through a comfort zone today by coming on the podcast.
Huge comfort zone.
A lot of people's comfort zone gets absolutely hammered with karaoke. You're next up on the mic, Pam. What are you singing?
In like real life? Like, what do you mean?
What are you singing for karaoke? You're up next on the karaoke mic. What are you singing?
What do I sing at karaoke? I don't know.
You're up. Time to sing. Let's
go. Am I supposed to sing something?
You have to right now.
You didn't tell me. This is like, may grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, oh, now I'm found. I was blind, but now I see.
Wow.
Do I have to sing more?
Well, first of all, I didn't actually mean for you to...
Well, then that was a very confusing
thing. Which was awesome.
You can't even do that to a...
And with that, folks, oh my goodness, this has been an amazing episode of Elements of Style.
Oh,
if
God.
You thought of somebody, please, pretty please, share this with them. And please come to the event on June 9th.
Yeah.
Megan. Bam, thank you for sharing. Grateful.
You're the best. You're like me.
Jinx.
Yeah, love you, man.
We'll see you soon. We love you very much. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Hey, thanks for joining us today. If you enjoyed the show, be sure to subscribe on your platform of choice for a new episode each week and share this with everyone and anyone. If you have any questions or comments or have an idea for another guest, feel free to shoot me an email at mstiles@styles-law.com. That's mstiles@styles-law.com. And if you are a real estate professional, be sure to check us out on our private exclusive Facebook page, The Real Estate School at 892, for content and Massachusetts continuing education opportunities. Be well, folks.
This episode is brought to you in part by Secura Title. Secura Title is a fractional paralegal service assisting with all things real estate in Massachusetts and New Hampshire. SecuraTitle.com, where security and title come together. SecuriTitle.com. Secura Title.
This podcast is being provided for informational purposes only. The podcast is not a comprehensive overview of the subject and is not intended to provide legal or financial advice or an endorsement of any product or business. The views expressed by podcast guests are their own, and their appearance on the podcast does not imply any endorsement of them or any entity they represent. Please seek legal, financial, or tax advice before taking any action on the matters or products discussed herein.